Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, that's his truth telling device, right? Mm-hmm. So he's just coming up to her and saying, look, sometimes when we touch, the honesty is too much.
Oh, no.
I have to close my eyes.
No.
What?
No.
Yes.
No. Yeah,
it's done.
No.
It's already. It's.
It's awful.
It's historical. Greetings, savory inferiors, and welcome to Vampire Insider, the unofficial podcast dedicated to recapping and reacting to AMC's Immortal Universe, including Interview with the Vampire and the Mayfair Witches. In each episode, hosts Joanne Palumbo, Christina LaRusso, and myself, Mark Snedeker, summarize the episode, talk about Easter eggs, discuss standout characters and their arcs, explore some of the predominant themes, and identify the best magic moment in a segment called Witch Please. Please join us now as we dive into episode 2, The Dark Place. Hello, my Italian friends. Hello, Joanne Palumbo. Hello, Christina LaRusso.
Ciao.
Hey, Paizan.
I want to highlight someone. If you are not following this person on Twitter, but I'm going to give you this person's at. It's at TaleTreading. At Talit Reader. This person is doing recaps after the episode. Mm-hmm. And we are.
And they're excellent.
They're excellent. The recaps are outstanding. That's somebody that if you're on Twitter, you should be following this person because the recaps are outstanding and provides a lot of thoughtful analysis. They have a strong understanding of the books and bring a lot of really insightful analysis. So follow them on Twitter, and then hopefully we're going to work together and get them to appear on the podcast.
Right on.
I like when we have guests. Let's have
I do guest. Too.
All right, so let's talk about some hot takes on the episode. This week, we're going to start with Joanne Palumbo, Italian number one.
So, yeah, this week's episode was a little more action-packed than our introductory episode, which we were hoping was going to be the case. We got to see Rowan make her way to New Orleans, trying to piece together some of the puzzle, and there was some more witchy-woo, which we love. But most importantly, Mark.
Yes.
Who was Rowan in the scene with? Could you refresh my memory?
I'm trying to think.
It was Dr. Keck. Joanne, you were right. We
Thank you.
We were wrong. He did not die.
He should have died.
You see, here's the thing. No. I'm outnumbered, right? You guys are in the same room. And I'm like the odd man out. And sometimes, you know, I don't remember how much of our discussion of it actually aired in last week's episode, but it was pretty lengthy. And I was like, I don't think she killed the first guy. And Mark's like, she got in the bed with her mom and was like, I killed him. And I'm like, I don't think so, but I gave in. And
you did.
From
you
now should. On, when I know I'm right, I am going to fight you two to the death.
Do it. Right, well, absolutely.
That seems very extreme.
You were correct.
It is extreme.
And we were wrong. And that's why in last week's episode, I cut out a lot of that conversation because I wasn't quite sure.
You're right.
You had actually convinced me. So I did cut most of that out. So in the episode, it doesn't really even sound like we said, I think we say he died, but we didn't. I didn't leave that lengthy conversation.
To be fair, there's sometimes I'm wrong and Christina is gracious and she cuts things out. However, this time I wasn't. And
so you want Christina to go back in and restore that whole giant argument?
No.
I mean, I wouldn't mind it if it made it into this episode's footage.
Yeah. As an outtake or something.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
All right. So you like the action. You like the witchcraft.
Like I said, I'm glad she made it to New Orleans. She's making some headway into finding out who she is, what she is, etc. The end was really the best part. You know, when the elevator door opens and she looks into Deirdre's eyes and Deirdre looks into hers and they're both like, you must be my mom because you have the same spectacular eyes I do. Yeah. And then her throat starts bleeding. So,
right. So that was a little bit of a letdown probably for her.
But it was exciting because it was like, holy shit, it slit her throat, you know?
Yeah, you're fine with it.
Yeah, whodunit? Yeah.
Yes, I agree with Joanne that this really was a pretty action-packed episode. We've started to see some more exposition as it pertains to the Talamasca. They're basically saying, well, don't help them, just watch them, right? Or we're not sending you help, right? Just watch. And then you can protect her, but don't tell them anything about their history or anything like that, right? Which Sip, if I may call you Sip, really wants to be more active and proactive and tell Rowan what's going on with her family. And he's being instructed basically not to, just hold back and watch, you know, just make sure every breath she takes, every move she makes, you're watching her. Mm-hmm. And that's his job, I guess. Rowan is more frantic this episode. Like, she's really frazzled by this experience.
Well, wouldn't you be?
And everything's gone, which is normal. It's not exactly how she was portrayed in the book. You can tell she's like at the end of her rope, and she did not enjoy her therapy session at all, which I can identify with. I get it. But her power is really like closer and closer to the surface because, of course, she's so much more emotional and distressed. So I think that can really, you know, it could just pop out and kill large swaths of people. So I like the episode this week. I was very happy to see those developments and the plot moving forward and some stuff actually happening. I enjoyed it.
I loved this episode. I have watched it now, I think four times to try and pick up on stuff in the background because I was so honed in on what was going on in the episode and the story.
Yeah.
And completely absorbed into it that I could not follow. I couldn't sort of watch what was going on in the background.
You couldn't be analytical, Christina.
I wasn't being analytical. I was just along for the ride of the story. And yeah. I was so excited that it was such a great story for episode two. So many details that I liked. And we'll get into some of those in the episode recap. But I would say now this was just a full on positive for me, where last week I was neutral to positive.
Yep.
Now I'm just positive.
Great.
I just felt really, really good about this episode. Let's kind of do an episode recap just to sort of get everybody on the same page. We're looking at multiple layers of story here. And as both Mark and Joanne, you guys both noted, everything's going to kind of converge on New Orleans, and that's starting to happen. But one of the things that we saw in this episode was deep history of the Mayfairs.
Yes.
We started out in Scotland.
Yeah, great, right?
For people who are finding us just now because of the Mayfair Witches, my background is as a historian. So this was thrilling to me. I was so excited to be in history. And so we start out with Suzanne, who is the first Mayfair Witch.
The local cunning woman.
Well, yes, she seems to be helping who I can only assume is her mother, maybe?
Yeah.
With nursing, which, you know, was true. That's what women would have been in charge of.
Gathering the herbs.
Gathering herbs and using those to help heal.
And bark and shit, you know.
Yeah. So we were doing
some other things too.
Well, that's true. We'll get there. But so we start out back in history in Scotland. Then we are brought forward to join Rowan in her grief.
Yes.
Having lost Ellie last week to her cancer. Now here we are. And Rowan is grieving and trying to run from her grief by self-medicating, but then also, you know, working.
Yeah.
And work says, hold on, Dr. Keck, who in this scene didn't seem to be, to me, kind of as big of a dick. He just seemed to be like, you know, you're not on top of your game, which is a fair thing for a boss to say.
He also didn't seem to be dead at all.
No, he's alive.
That was a bit surprising. That was a shocker.
For a dead guy, he was quite reasonable. You know,
he really was. He was. And I was like, oh, maybe he's a vampire, you guys.
Yeah.
So Rowan has to go see a therapist to determine whether or not she's okay to work. That goes sideways. She just bails out of that. There's a lot going.
Because she starts to murder her therapist.
Well, so. I don't know. Is she, or because the therapist says, this happens to me all the time.
Zero chance that that's all that's going on.
What it is that Rowan doesn't know now. Rowan doesn't know if she's doing it somehow, or if this is actually just a natural thing. So she takes off. She's being followed by Sip.
Yep.
Still. There's some birds that die.
Yeah. I mean,
that Rowan kills the birds.
I was going to say, I think you have to cop to that one because that typically three crows just don't fall over dead onto your car.
But they shit on her car and it's an Audi.
She's like, you know what? That was a mistake, Mr. Raven.
You chose the wrong car to shit on.
Are you familiar with the phrase nevermore? Here you go. Nevermore for you.
Nevermore for you and you.
Yeah, exactly. You and your friends. I'm killing all of you.
She takes the birds to the beach to bury them.
That was also weird.
That was weird.
They're birds. Throw them in the you know, the island in the parking lot and just move on with your day.
Just take off.
Nobody's coming to look for you for the deaths of these ravens.
I know. But she has her first encounter with Sip at this point.
Yes.
And Sip is, as you mentioned, concerned because he feels that he should talk to her and say, hey, here's what's going on.
Right.
And the Talamasca says, absolutely
don't
not.
Tell her anything. What are you,
just
nuts?
You're there to protect her. Okay, yeah. Well, how does he do that without telling her what's going on?
Right.
I don't know. But anyway, they have their first encounter and she does her thing with Sip.
But he grabbed her hand to get that historical, you know, that psychic flash that he got. Mm-hmm. And it almost damn near killed him.
Right.
So I don't know that she was like doing the same thing where she's bursting blood vessels, but maybe just touching her because she's such a powerful witch or whatever is too much for him.
Could be, but she saw the tunnel, which is usually what happens when she's picturing someone's blood vessel. So then she sees in his phone evidence that her mom.
By the way, a little bit ghoulish of her. She's like, I'm going to just use his unconscious, possibly dying face to unlock this phone.
I know.
Rather than, you know, maybe checking his vitals or something.
She's like, savage. Hey,
look over here, dead boy. Thank you. And of course, she only has to unlock it once, apparently. And then
I thought that too. When she was on the plane flipping through, I'm like, oh, it's still
maybe
working.
She changed the settings.
Maybe she did.
Could be.
But I mean, also, my face recognition, it's hit and miss.
Yeah.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So she was just very.
And I mean, did he set his biometrics with his eyes closed, I guess? I don't know. He's like, I want to be able to open my phone in my sleep. So
so she decides then she's going to go to New Orleans. Okay.
Right.
In New Orleans, what do we have going on? So Rowan is in a grieving dark place. Deirdre is obviously also in a dark place.
More of a coma.
Also horny.
And also, yes, well, when she wakes up, it's been 30 years.
I mean, she's a Mayfair. That's what they do.
But she's not getting, thanks to Joanne's standout character last week, Dr. Lamb, she is no longer getting her Thorazine shot.
Right, so she's waking up.
Kenzie
was my standout.
That's exactly right.
You are just prescient. To the max last week.
That's exactly right. You were better than all of us, Joanne.
Joanne, you're the best among us.
We're going to give you the credit.
I know. You're making me blush. Come on, keep going.
It'll be all right.
She wakes up, and the first thing she does is hightail it. Well, after she sort of makes a plan.
Yeah.
She breaks her snow globe and then has sex with Lasher.
Right. That's, you know, that's the order in which these things should happen.
Which her daughter creepishly felt.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unclear to me how that works.
Some kind of psychic connection.
In the book, it's Lasher just doing that to her.
Yeah, he's just doing it to her.
Well, this time he was doing it to her mama.
Well, by the time Rowan is traveling to New Orleans in the book, Deirdre's dead.
Yeah.
So here, that's not the case. So
otherwise, if she were, that scene would have been even creepier.
Lasher is hitting it, and then Rowan is also experiencing it on the plane.
With her mom.
Along with her mom. There's a lot of,
I mean, you know.
Well, it's different. So anyway.
No sex shaming.
Rowan gets to New Orleans, but Deirdre, by this time, has hightailed it out of.
She's done a runner.
The Mayfair house. And right to Uncle Cortland, who seems surprised to see her.
He's like, oh, I thought you were dead.
But provides
her with a bang again, you know,
her with a gorgeous green. She took off with her nightie on.
Yeah.
She's just taken off across town to go to Uncle Cortland's in her nightgown. And then finally he gets her cleaned up and gives her a dress. And then Deirdre exhibits her witchy power.
She's gonna do the craft
and,
right there.
And she uses
we call it the craft, Christina.
Okay.
Please don't disrespect my beliefs.
I am not, Mark. She uses Lasher to figure out where Rowan is.
Yes.
And Lasher finds Rowan in her hotel, the Pontchartrain in New Orleans.
Right.
So Deirdre goes to the hotel.
You forgot about the part where Carlotta spotted Deirdre.
She's at the hotel having lunch and sees Deirdre walk in.
That's alarming.
Yep.
Maybe I should talk to her, considering she's been bedridden for 35 years.
So Deirdre heads up to the hotel room that she knows Rowan is in, and Rowan is going to come down.
Well, she actually got a phone call from Sip and was going to go meet him now.
Oh, that's right. She's going downstairs to meet Sip. He's like, I'll meet you in the lobby. She's like, fine, I almost killed you. That's the least I can do.
That's right. So then she's heading down to the lobby, and Deirdre is heading up to her room. Rowan is waiting to get onto the elevator and the doors open and they see each other.
I'm like, oh, it's you.
As hey, Joanne pointed out.
Why is your head falling off?
And then her Deirdre's throat has been cut.
Yes. So that was.
Who done it? We don't know.
That's less than ideal.
Oh, I think I know who did it. Carlotta.
You think it's Carlotta? How? Oh, because the elevator stops on.
Yeah.
The elevator stops on six, but when Deirdre gets on the elevator, she's alone.
Carlotta could have followed her to the elevator
to floor six on the stairs or something.
No, I don't think she killed her on floor six. She could have cut her throat on floor one.
Couldn't she? Isn't she a witch?
She is.
Okay, she used her.
I don't know if she has a throat cutting spell, but who knows?
Well, we don't know what's in there.
I think my prime suspect, I think, is the same as Christina's. It's Lasher.
Yeah, I think it's Lasher.
He's just kind of like, he can manifest physically. It's just cost him a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. And I mean, look, if you can bang.
Well, he just expelled a lot of energy earlier.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you can bang, you can stab. He could have picked up a piece of the snow globe and then.
I think Carlotta did it.
Yeah, you might be right. We'll find out, I suspect.
Probably soon.
You may be right, Joanne, because you have been right at least once.
You're on a roll. Twice.
At least once.
Twice.
Well, okay, but also it should be noted that in the elevator, while she's waiting for the elevator, someone walks behind Rowan in a white shirt. They look like they may be wearing a hat, and
appears to be
a male.
Well, you know who it probably is? Uncle Julien.
Cortland is the one.
Maybe Cortland, but it also could be.
Oh, that's right. She would have recognized Cortland. Right.
It would have been also. It could also be the ghost of Julien. But yeah, you're probably right. Cortland. That seems like more of a Cortland thing. Maybe he's killed her.
Could be Cortland.
Because he didn't seem that happy. He recovered, but he was kind of like, oh.
How awkward.
I mean, considering I impregnated you and you're my niece or whatever.
Yeah, well, and then also he was asking, he asked
about
Lasher.
Lasher.
Where's Lasher?
Does anybody know you're here? In case I need to get rid of your body.
So that point.
Cortland might be a better guess.
It could be, but I don't know if that's Cortland in the background.
Yeah.
It's too far away.
It's very fuzzy and hard to see.
I don't think it's Cortland in the background. It's certainly not Lasher. In the background.
No, he doesn't have that level of fashion sense.
Mm-mm, no, although he looks better in this episode. He did. He had better fashion in this episode.
Well, they emailed me and asked if we really, really thought he looked like Gene Simmons. I was like, yeah, we really do. So she's like, okay, well, we're going to do some quick edits and make sure we're doing some quick reshoots this week. Yeah. So he doesn't look as much like Gene Simmons. No.
So, Christina, Mark, it's that time of the week where we talk about our Easter eggs. Mark, last week we started with you. I think this time we will start with the lovely Christina.
Okay, so they are Easter eggs, I think. And let's see if I am correct or incorrect. We are seeing so many birds in this series, okay? And, I mean, birds have a very – they're supposed to be – messengers from beyond. So
right.
Ghostly messengers or, you know, they symbolize that kind of connection between the world and the afterlife or.
Correct. Especially
also,
ravens.
Especially. Right. Additionally, just to add in another layer, they have also been known to be symbolic saints, ancient. So the early saints of the Catholic Church,
right.
Some of them had interactions with birds. So, for instance, St. Francis of Assisi had some interactions with birds. And so birds can also signify connection from heaven.
Right.
Okay.
Well, and the Holy Spirit is often represented as a bird.
Right.
And yeah, okay.
Okay, so now bear with me.
Oh, I'm bearing.
We learned this week that they are expecting to have a crossover guest from Interview.
Right.
And I'm going to say that it's Paul.
Ah.
And this is why, because who talks to Paul?
Sip?
No.
Oh.
Who, when Paul says that he's hearing things, who's telling him those things?
Angels.
The little birds.
Oh.
The little birds.
I think that's it. Paul is dead.
No. But listen, I think it'll be turn of the century. Yeah. And I think because of course the Mayfairs, and we already know that Paul mentions the Mayfairs in the first episode of Interview with a Vampire.
Correct.
So as much as I'd love it to be Lestat, you know, like we get to see
Lestat
or Louis.
Yeah.
I think that it's going to be Paul. And I do think that the birds in this case, I don't think that we can ignore the birds that talk to Paul and the birds that are
right. That seems reasonable to make that connection.
And those birds are whispering. Okay. When we're seeing the birds in The Witches, they're whispering names and things like that.
So do you think that Paul was some sort of Mayfair witch?
I don't know that he was a witch. I think that he was
clairvoyant or something.
He was connecting. Right. So remember when we talked back in interview, we talked about this episode where Paul, it was one in the episode where Paul was, I think, where he died by suicide. I remember talking to you all about it and saying, do you think that Paul actually was being contacted?
Do you think he was really hearing voices?
Were their voices really talking to him?
Yeah.
Or was he, you know, suffering from schizophrenia or some kind of mental disease? Right. Well, I argued at that time, and I still argue it. As far as we know, this is a world where vampires exist.
It is true.
Mm-hmm. If this is a world where vampires exist, then this could be a world where God exists and could where be. Saints and angels and things like that also exist. So
and it doesn't even have to be God, though, right? It could just be some other spiritual power, you know, entity that is, you know, speaking to him through the ether or whatever.
Yeah. So he could have that. You know, maybe he does have some kind of ability because Sip does.
Yeah.
So why would we think that Paul doesn't?
Right.
Except for the fact that like Louis and the family didn't accept the fact that Paul had.
I think it's good to just reflect a little bit on how this universe is constructed, that it's not simply just vampires and witches. Those certainly, you know, are part of the structure. They're very different in what they are and what they can do. But there are also plenty of humans that are gifted, right?
Gifted psychically. Humans.
In fact, a lot of them find their way into the Talamasca, mm-hmm. right? They have a little bit, not, you know, super powerful like the Mayfair witches for the most part, but they can often, you know, read thoughts or.
Well, they tout themselves as psychic detectives.
We can't say that this is a universe where everything else is totally scientific and there is no paranormal because there is paranormal.
Correct.
There is supernatural.
Yes.
So if there is, then Paul may have had, like we said, there may have been something that was going on with Paul that was actually real and not just Paul being mentally unwell. And Paul understood it to be God talking to
him.
The birds for me are going to mean something going through the rest of the series. So I think we need to watch what's going on there. Joanne, who do you think is going to be the person that shows up?
Hear me out.
Okay.
Hold my beer.
Okay. In Interview, it's, you know, present day. It's Louis and Daniel and, you know, they're retelling the story in 2022. Presumably that's the timeline that we're in right now with the witches. I think we are going to see modern day 2022 Lestat in New Orleans. He has no reason to not go back there. It's been over 100 years since they had to leave because everybody, you know, was suspicious of them because they weren't aging. So anybody that was alive back then is dead. It's safe for him to go back. So that's my theory. She's going to cross paths with Lestat.
That's
consistent with the book.
Yeah.
Right?
And they have an attraction to one another.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how could you not? I mean, look at
this. She asks to be made a vampire.
Yeah.
And he won't do it.
And he won't do it.
Not because he's such
the one person he won't turn into a vampire. Right.
Well, because they felt like because she was leading the Mayfair family and she was such a powerful witch that he didn't think that they could afford to
lose her
in the fight against order. I don't know what they're fighting against.
Well,
that's my prediction. I mean, it's a little wishful thinking, but it's also a great way to lead into.
It wouldn't be bad.
I mean, Lestat could have gone underground.
It would be a huge shock if he shows up on screen because there's been no hint of anybody crossover. That would be a very huge thing to pull off and to have done it with no publicity leaking out at all.
Well, at the time that they would have been shooting it, there would be no publicity.
They
would have
been, but I'm just saying now, limited. Like, it, you know.
So then what do you think, Mark?
Yeah, who do you think it'll be?
Hold on. I'm not done criticizing your thoughts.
Oh, my God.
I was done having you criticize that, but go on.
I think Lestat is a good guess. Thank because you. It that's in line with the book. It's a little early in the story to bring in Lestat, but it could be Lestat. Paul is an excellent guess. That's an interesting call. Like, to have a flashback scene where, you know, Paul interacts with the witches. I think at that point, like, who is the head witch back then? Mary Beth,
maybe?
Yeah, which she was no joke, right? Mm-hmm. She was probably the most powerful Mayfair witch.
Up till Rowan.
You know who I think it's going to be?
Who?
Is that likely at all? Could be Daniel.
I thought about Daniel too. I was like,
maybe like a young Daniel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the other Easter egg is there was a news report about a burnt body in Arizona.
Yeah. I heard that.
Yeah. What was that about?
Well, Christina knows.
I don't know. I don't know what it's about.
Yeah, but it's definitely
a
thing.
But I think that it's going to be a thing. I don't know what it could be about. Well, yeah. I mean, they spent too much time focused on that.
Not for it to be
a vampire that burnt in the sun.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Vampire, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, I think that the obvious guess would be that it has something to do with like a witch burning. But anyway, so I think that we have to keep an eye on this burnt body. So, and then the other thing that I wanted to point out from the historical section of this, and I mean, my God, I could go into so much. First of all, they did a really good job with the early modern cottage, the Scottish peasant's cottage. They did such a great job with that setting. Yeah. And, you know, it wasn't like pure and clean. It looked like a peasant's cottage, and there's a person in there suffering, and a woman was tending to him and sends Suzanne and her sister out to get some medicinal plants. And those plants included willow bark, burdock, cornflower, and salvia. And if you then go and look at all of those different things, it makes sense within the context of what's going on in the scene.
How did the hand job shine in?
Here's how. Okay. Yeah. So this
Mary Begot guy.
This is the Mary Begot guy. So yeah. Suzanne, as we know in the book, is the first Mayfair witch.
Yes.
This is pre-witch right now. We've got her before she's become a witch. The thought is that her daughter, Deborah, is a Mary Begot in the book.
Which means?
Which means that she's a bastard. No one knows where
who the father is. It's during some
May.
Yeah, at the May Spring Festival when, you know, the sap is rising, as they say.
Right,
but they're treated with reverence and they're regarded as protected, right? Unlike a bastard any other time.
Right.
A Mary Begot has some kind of automatic acceptance built in. So,
well, according to Anne Rice.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah.
All right. So, but the guy that she's with in the woods, so as they're collecting their medicinal plants, this guy shows up from behind a tree and he is wearing a fur collar, which of course denotes his status. The rumor is that Deborah was the daughter of the Lord of the Manor. And it seems that the writers of this are going to carry on with that rumor. And so she's just giving this guy a handy in the woods, Suzanne.
Well, now that's a very indelicate way of putting
it. Well, she puts her hand over his mouth to keep him quiet. She's not doing this because she obviously loves him or has any kind of loving feelings. She's in a situation where she feels like she has to do this. So that's not great. But within the scope of that situation, she's just doing it. It's very perfunctory and she's just doing it. So I actually like the way that scene went. Instead of it being like this, you know, she's swept away and in love with
the Lord. If you're swept away, allowing someone to manipulate you manually is not really, I mean, that's not very reciprocal.
She's just doing this thing. So we don't know what she gets out of it. Who knows if he, it's no doubt it's transactional, but I mean, the thing is that he's either going to rape her or she's going to do it.
Right.
And it seems that she's just kind of acquiescing.
Maybe
so
she
it's not
did like it to keep him away from the little sister. Right. Like, yeah,
could be,
you know,
yeah,
could be, could
he didn't
be
seem but like a stand up guy to me.
No,
I didn't have any really better Easter egg than that, but I did notice possibly a little bit more of they're really starting to lean into the religious symbolism, right? As Christina pointed out. And if you remember when Deirdre breaks the snow globe and she cuts her hand It's a very particular kind of wound. So that was, it did look a bit like a stigmata wound, which is meant to symbolize suffering and sacrifice, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see if we see more stuff like that, just like little flashes of oppressive Catholicism stuck in there. Because, of course, you know, Anne Rice herself was very big on the religious symbolism and, you know, was raised Catholic, and all of her characters appear to be mostly Catholic. So it'll be interesting to see if they stick more stuff in there like that. But that definitely looked like a stigmata wound to me. All right, so we've talked a bit about the symbolism and the Easter eggs. Let's move on to your standout character. Christina, who do you got?
This week, I'm going to say it's Deirdre. The reason is because the way that she woke up and
got out of bed, dragged a comb across her head.
Perfectly fine after being in a
Yeah, room. Right.
After no, being, yeah.
Well, now, you know, she must be getting some great PT. Because, yeah, she had no atrophy at all. She's just like wandering out. And apparently her caregiver is like, you know, you have been in a coma for like 30 years and you haven't left the house or even spoken. But you did give me that kind of hushing hand signal, so I'm going to let you go.
Yeah,
it's fine. Yeah, it's good. You'll be fine. I'm sure it's just New Orleans.
Deirdre.
It's not like it's a dangerous big city or anything.
Deirdre was my standout. She gets up. She goes and does this thing with Cortland and brings Lasher under her control. And that, I thought, was a cool way to show her strength.
Yeah.
Because honestly, she's a powerful witch.
Absolutely.
Deirdre, the reason that she's not been able to exercise her strength is because, of course, Carlotta has kept her medicated for all of these years. So I thought it was a really cool thing to see her use that power to direct Lasher. And to be able to see through Lasher's eyes what was going on.
Yeah. Okay.
And then what did you guys think, though, when Lasher was reaching out for Rowan? This was a question that was raised online, which is, do you think that he was? And actually, I when I saw it, I was thinking the same thing. And then on Twitter, it came up on Twitter. Do you think that he was reaching when she stopped him from reaching out? At yes. Rowan, was that because she was jealous or was that for some other reason?
To protect her or something?
I think it looked like sexual jealousy to me.
You thought it was jealousy?
Instead of protection? Yeah, I think so.
And Joe, you think it's protection?
Protection,
She was trying to protect Rowan?
But from what, sex?
No, wait, I don't know.
Lasher.
Well, but she loves Lasher.
She does.
Deirdre
doesn't think sex with Lasher is a problem unless it's with someone other than her.
All right. So for me, I thought it was just get to it. Like, Lasher, you are under my control.
Yeah.
Because I feel like
it's not time for being horned
off. Right. I felt like I don't think it was necessarily jealousy. I think it was her saying, I control you. Back off of her of this and get me the information that I need. Because I'm really digging, and it's my own bias, but I'm really digging Deirdre's strength in this, and that's why I liked her as a character.
And I think it's reasonable to, when in doubt, interpret it somewhat in a feminist vein, because the showrunners have basically said this is about female power, empowerment, female power. We can argue about how successful they're presenting that. I think. If there's a doubt, go with, you know, okay, it's her exerting her power. But I'm telling you, the actor made it look a lot like sexual jealousy.
Yeah. That is Annabeth Gish, by the way, which I love because she makes me remember Mystic Pizza. I mean, she looks very different than she did in Mystic Pizza.
And you just watched that not that long ago.
I did. I just watched that not long ago. So, okay, Joe, what about you? Who's your standout?
Well, it was going to be the dearly departed Deirdre, but
you can say her too.
It was for all your same reasons. So I'm going to go with my second, which was Sip. I thought that, you know, what I liked about his character and stuff is that he wants to help her. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't want to do what the traditional Talamasca way of is just sit back and watch and observe. He wants to get involved. He wants to protect her. He wants to help her learn about how to use her abilities and not to be afraid of them. He seems to really be so far the only one that's looking out for Rowan, right? Like, I don't think the rest of the family is going to be all like, hey, girl, welcome back. So I think she,
this is awkward.
Yeah.
He gave you away.
He's going to be her, you know, touchstone to reality while going through this transition and the shock of learning who she is and what she is. So I'll give it to him this week.
So Tongai Teresa brings this really calm presence to that role.
Right.
And I am really, I enjoy that a lot. I think that he's, it speaks to depth that if you would actually, you know, if they had followed what the book was doing, you didn't get that kind of depth from Michael.
Right now, he's manifesting Aaron Leitner.
I get that. He's a much more interesting character for that reason.
Michael, honestly, in the book, Michael's not that interesting a character.
Mm-mm, no, he's too shallow for me. There are some departures that are happening from the book, and we've talked about this, and that's why we're not going to have a book versus show. It's too many. But the ones that they are making, these choices that they are making, I think it's improving it somehow for me.
No, I think I'm going to go... I'm going such a hard decision. I'm going to say Lasher.
Ooh,
I like that.
Because now he's really putting things in motion here now, right? He is encouraging Deirdre to wake up. He's encouraging her sexually. And it looks like he's really, you know, improved that hairdo a bit.
He did look better in this season, episode.
Yeah, I'm going to say Lasher. For this one.
These are all very superficial, silly reasons that you've given.
No, but I think driving the story forward, I mean, he's really starting to manifest more and be more involved in the lives of these characters. And, you know, you see him really directly interacting a lot with Deirdre. And it would seem to me, at least, he's already kind of moved on from Deirdre and is now had his sights set on Rowan. Because, of course, that's Lasher's whole goal, is to get a Mayfair witch that's powerful enough to give him a baby. And that and being able to become more real, like it's kind of a Pinocchio thing, I guess. But
I'm a real boy.
It's like, clap if you believe in Lasher. I think we see Saint Ashler starting to step up.
Lasher as a concept, I think, is a fascinating character.
Yeah.
It is easier, I think, to write about him.
Than to show him.
But I like how Jack Houston is inhabiting this character. And I liked the conceit that they used in the series this week where they had kind of Deirdre behind a veil.
Yeah.
Because
the bride of Lasher.
Well, it just gave me more of a sense of what her life was like, right? Like that you're constantly behind some kind of
foggy curtain of
curtain
confusion.
or sheer curtain or something like that. And I thought that was really good. But the fact that Lasher's in there with her, right? And then she also says, I just never know where he is later when she talks to Cortland and he says, do you know where he is? And she said, I
can get him here if you need him, but... Yeah, I can't really sense exactly where he is.
Yeah.
He creeps me out. So I guess they did their
job, he's an evil sex demon. I think it's okay if he creeps you out, right?
So, you know, as far as like the actor goes and his presence, it is what it is. But as a character, he's quite interesting. And I think the way that, you know, writing him the way that she did, not being a real physical being, it gives him a lot more leeway to do a lot more things. And we don't know what in this new reimagined world, what his new capabilities could be. Right. So that's going to be fun and interesting to see.
Like, for example, do they include throat slitting?
Could be.
Right. Literally what I was just thinking, right? Like, could he do that? You know? So I don't see why he couldn't.
I mean, even in the book, when he's just this kind of somewhat limited spirit, he could go and fetch them gems and coins and stuff. So he can clearly interact with the physical world. And if you have a sharp enough knife, you know, it doesn't take that much. Here's the reason
I don't think it was him, Mark, because they made the point of showing that the elevator stopped on the 6th floor. Lasher wouldn't need to get on the elevator. He would just be like, poof. time here.
That's true.
So I don't think it's some, I don't think it was Lasher for that reason. But overall, he's definitely a fun character and there's lots of things they can do with him. So should be interesting to see what they have in store.
I mean, they did a lot with him in the book. Not all of it good.
No, true.
Most of it not.
Well, we'll see. We'll see where it goes. And all right. So let's talk a little bit about, I guess, eventually we'll be calling this arc. It's a little early in the season to be calling it character arc, but let's talk about a little bit character development. And I think we're getting there with them. For me, Rowan, this is where Alexandra Daddario is really putting in the effort, which is to show the agitation that Rowan is feeling.
Right.
But also shows where she finds moments of being grounded. So when she's frantic throughout most of this, right? But and when she's frantic, she behaves in a certain way so that you know that she's being, you know, that this is coming on her. But I think that she's not being dishonest when she says she feels best at work.
Yeah, because that she can then lose herself in other people's bodies and problems, et cetera, and doesn't have to think about her own. Self-reflection is maybe not her best skill.
Yeah.
Right.
One of the most effective things that I thought that they did with the series or with the episode was instead of just showing Rowan going through her grief, they used Sip's skills as a clairvoyant to be able to see. So she's saying to the therapist, well, I'm fine. I'm not really
Sip's
having...
like, girl, she drunk all the time.
She got little Xanax packets everywhere.
Yeah, she is pounding the vodka.
She's saying to the therapist, no, I don't have mood swings, you know?
Yeah.
And then you see Sip touch a glass and you see her, you know, sobbing on the floor of her boat. I loved the way that they told her story through his eyes.
So I'm going to give you just like a little inkling of an intuition about the Rowan character. Let's watch her wardrobe. Because so far, with the exception of that little brief psychic flash of her in the emerald dress, look what she's dressed like. She looks like she just jumped off the boat, right? She's always got, you know, like high water slacks on with boat shoes. Mm-hmm. Very, you know, like not
preppy.
Preppy kind of casual sporty type stuff. Mm-hmm. Like she just doesn't care about those types of things. And it'll be interesting as we move forward to see if they shift that wardrobe and her look at all as she gets entangled romantically with presumably Sip and then Lasher. Is she going to change, you know, the way, you know, her appearance?
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know that they will. I just noticed. I'm like, dude, she is dressed like she just jumped out of J. Crew in every scene.
Well, but that's true to the character in the book. She wears it. They talk about, how does she dress? What does she look like? And she's always got like a pea coat and a hat on.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's true to the book. And it will be interesting to see like how her styling changes as she becomes more secure in who she is,
or
as she learns about being a witch and her powers and all of the rest, and Lasher. Okay, well, who else? Sip.
So he's obviously becoming more and more invested in Rowan as a person, right? Not that he wasn't completely uninvested, but, you know, he was more of an academic curiosity, I think. And now he cares for her safety, right? Even though she almost murdered him. But he cares for her safety, and he's becoming more invested in her as a person. So you can see that they're foreshadowing the romance we know that is coming.
We know that it'll be coming.
Yeah. So that will be interesting. And, you know, very much against her type romantically, right? Because she likes the blue collar.
Right. And he's
clearly well educated, sophisticated.
Smart, sophisticated guy.
British for fuck's sake. Yeah, he's got a man bag.
Yeah, so. But he doesn't have an accent. Huh? He's not British.
Oh, that's right. He's not. Well, no. The Talamasca is.
Yeah. What, well, Dutch? I don't know. But but you're right. He has a very sophisticated vibe.
Right.
Which is different from.
I think I'm going to like them together.
Yeah.
I think he's I'm really impressed with him.
Yeah.
as an actor. I said, he's just being very subtle, but also, I don't know. He's really establishing himself as a strong character.
Yep. So we'll see how that kind of moves forward. Deirdre's development sadly is at an end.
But I did enjoy it though.
Yeah, she did have a lot going on in this episode. I think she was much more interesting than comatose Deirdre.
Well, obviously, yes, but I liked the maternal instinct. Like she just, you know, just wanted to see her daughter, you know, and that I really enjoyed that part.
It's a bittersweet though, right? Mm-hmm. They see each other, but at least they get to see each other.
Right at the moment of her murder. I think that's sweet.
Yeah. Well,
growing up, she just lost two moms.
But she's tough. Rowan's going to be fine. Okay, so development for Lasher. I think that
he's a dick, and he's just going to keep doing dicky things.
He's getting more sex now.
Do you really see you guys don't like him. You think he's a dick?
Well, of course he's a bad guy. I mean, because we know he's an evil guy.
I know, but I kind of like him.
All right. Well, then you're weird.
I like the bad guy. This is
I kind of like Lasher. I mean, I know that he's a bad guy. I know that he's doing,
but you like the character. Bad,
but I like the character.
All right.
I think the character, that
well, it's very interesting
of that character.
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
it is interesting, but that doesn't mean he's not a dick.
No, well, we've learned that we can like characters who are dicks because
there aren't a lot of
them. Hello, Lestat.
Yeah, there are not a lot of people in Anne Rice's books that weren't dicks. So. Michael was one of them. He's not in the show. So
everybody's
a dick.
They're all
complicated.
They're all complicated characters. I think that's it, really, that we can speak to. Carlotta is Carlotta. Cortland is going to be Cortland, who I think is going to be, well, I don't know. I wonder if Julian is such a big character. Yeah. They have to go. Because they keep showing us old photographs, too.
Right.
They keep showing us pictures from back in time. The first episode, we saw the doctor look at an old photo that was on a shelf. Sip had
an old photo.
A picture of that. And then several other old photos in his phone that
harken back to those days of yore. Yes,
or I was thinking last week that Cortland is going to stand in for Julian, but now I don't know. I don't know how they cannot talk about Julian because Julian's the male.
He's the male witch, and he's a parent to most of the Mayfair witches.
Yeah.
Welcome now to the part of the show we like to call Witch Please, which is our favorite display of the craft, or witchy poo, as Joanne says.
No, witchy woo.
Whatever.
Witchy poo is on.
She's on HR Puffin stuff.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
Okay, good. All right, Joanne.
Okay, Mark.
Tell us your favorite magical moment.
I had two.
Oh, you only get one.
You only get one because we each need one too.
I mean, Jesus. She's like, I just liked all the magic in the whole show.
Don't hog it all up.
Fine. You guys are no fun. Cool. Okay. Yeah. I liked when, and I'll say why, I liked when she killed the birds. And here's why. The moment that she really realized, like, okay, you know, look, I gave a little girl a seizure. I stroked out another dude, killed another dude. Maybe this isn't really happening. But then she kills the birds because they shit on her car, which power move right there. I wish I could do that.
They will never do that again.
Yeah, exactly. And that was really, for me, you know, an awesome display of her power. It wasn't like this magical thing that she did. It wasn't like this massive spell, but it was a pivotal moment for her because she was like, holy shit, I'm actually doing this. So for me, it was the scene with the three birds that she killed.
Three little birds. Oh, there you are. Three birds.
That's right.
It's a trinity again.
That's right.
We got to keep watching for threes.
That's right. Well, you know, I don't have another trinity joke this week. I used it.
Thank God. Yeah. Mark, what was your favorite witchy woo moment?
I mean, this is a little easy, but the remote viewing that she does. Now, that is the first example of just a full out spell. I mean, she's casting a spell to send Lasher as her remote viewing spirit, you know, very spectacular and showy, you know, your eyeballs go white and the whole thing. So she sends Lasher off to do her bidding, not even just to like go and spy and report back, but she's watching him in real time. I mean, I'm not sure what interrupted it. Like, did she just run out of juice or something?
She got what she needed. She found out where he was.
It was very abrupt. It was very abrupt.
Where Rowan was, because all she needed to know,
she saw the Pontchartrain.
She saw the hotel and the keychain.
Yeah. So
that's a pretty neat trick.
Lasher did not look pleased, by the way, for that to be interrupted. You see when he's fading out, he kind of makes this dark, you know, glare face. But yeah, that was very spectacular.
Here's what I love about that. Lasher is her demon. That is her.
Well, over,
she's in control of him.
Over the years, certain witches have been able to exert influence over him and work their will.
The part that I like the best with magic was when she was engaging with Sip. And that is because she was worried. She knew at that point that she's able to do these things. She doesn't understand how or why.
Right.
But she's not afraid, right? Like, of him. She's in a power position. She knows that she's
like, look, if I get mad, you're just going to fall over with a seizure.
Like, she can't control herself.
Yeah.
And I like, though, that she seemed to recognize that, that she seemed to be aware that be away from me. Not that he was going to hurt her,
but I might murderize you.
I might hurt you. And so it's not really a display of power so much as it is a reckoning with power.
Yeah.
A reckoning. Yes. So I felt like that was really a cool manifestation of it. I can't wait though for the old timey Suzanne Witcher.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be fun.
I can't wait.
Here's a thing that always mystifies me. So they're out there gathering medicinal herbs and flowers, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They are always able to find this incredible variety of palliative plants. Like, if I had to go out and find anything, just something simple. I mean, first of all, I wouldn't recognize them, right? But, and obviously it's a different world that we live in.
But I mean, houses to knock all that. Yeah,
could you just run around and find pennyroyal? I don't even know.
Well, they would have cultivated it. So in this case, it looked like they were just kind of
wandering around.
Oh, and the detail. Can I please just say that her cloak, it was shredded, and it was like the shot of her cloak going over the tall grass.
You love that.
I loved it. I loved it. There was so much authenticity.
You love it.
I loved it.
It was very cinematic.
So much authenticity from a historical perspective.
Yeah.
What wasn't necessarily was that they would have had a garden. They would have had there would have been a garden where they would have
go to the pennyroyal section of the garden and clip one of those.
They would have had, you know, where they were
wander through the forest.
Their house, their garden, and the woman of the house would have medicinal herbs because that's how they solved their problems.
Try to keep people alive.
The things that she was sending her out for were things that would help with digestion, were things that would help with pain. And this guy was clearly in pain and he seemed to be having some kind of stomach thing going on and that the mother was caring for. And so I think that that was accurate.
Yeah.
What wasn't accurate, which they had to do because she's far afield so that the Lord of the Manor can come and find her.
Yeah.
But
for his daily.
Yeah. but other than that, I was really happy with all of the historical detail.
Good.
What I'm going to be very curious about is how they're going to handle the witchcraft, though, because I know that it is a popular trope to say that the midwives are always the ones, or midwives and healers, the women, the female healers of the village were the ones that were often picked on as potentially witches, when really in the European witch craze, it wasn't necessarily that. In fact, in some of the cases, the midwives were the ones making the accusations against other women. It's just usually poor women or women on the fringe or women on, you know, single women. That was always, that's scary when women are single. And so I'll be interested to see how they do the witch persecution part of it. That whole history of witches and the persecution of witches has evolved so much over time. And the European witch craze is very much different from Salem. So whatever you know about Salem, you can't apply to Europe. It's different. It's very different.
I think it's time to wrap things up. I did not bring this up to Mark or Christina, but I do want to talk about something before we get into our final thoughts on this episode. And I think that not to discuss it would just be wrong. And I know you guys are going to agree with me on this. I am so livid at the Golden Globes and the Hollywood Foreign Press for ignoring Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah.
They missed an opportunity to celebrate a really great show and really great actors. And if anyone knows anybody in the Hollywood Foreign Press, you tell them I said I'm pissed.
No, it's outrageous, Joe. I agree with you. And this is a good thing to talk about. I remember when we first started the season with Interview, your prediction was that they would be nominated and win, right?
For nominated.
And they weren't even nominated.
Which is crazy because they've gotten amazing critical reviews. They're 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
House of the Dragon, they won some stuff. Why? That's not even that good.
It's not even like a sci. It's not like, well, sci-fi is not a big category. It's huge. You know, they're in the right genre. Like there's no reason that they should have just been completely shut out.
I didn't watch because I was extremely upset about it. But you do know about the scandal with the Golden Globes
last year, and they've since corrected that and stuff. But I'm sorry. This is what pissed me off. The Tommy Lee and Pam Anderson thing was nominated for a bunch of stuff. Come on.
Yeah.
That gets a nomination. And I know they're different genres, but I'm just making the point. But Interview with the Vampire didn't even get any type of acknowledgement. They didn't bring them out as presenters. Nothing.
I'm just looking at an article from the New York Post, which is not the greatest newspaper of all time, but they have, you know, decent entertainment writers. And they're basically saying that the House of the Dragon win proves that the Golden Globes are a joke.
Yeah.
And they talk about how the show was fine, right? It was good, but it wasn't amazing television. And they give some examples of shows that were much better made. Rings of Power on Amazon, Interview with the Vampire, mm-hmm. The Sandman. All of them, he says right here, all of them have a level of craft that sloppy House of the Dragon lacks.
This has got bullshit written all over it.
Yeah,
it
does. No, I agree. And I think AMC bears some of the responsibility because AMC should have been doing more to promote it to be an award. You know, who knows if they sent, who knows what they submitted. Whatever. I'm frustrated along with you, Joanne.
I'm with you too, Joni.
Well, good. I'm glad that we talked about it, but let's get back to the matter at hand. Our final thoughts on this week's episode. I'll start. I thought overall it was a really good episode. I'm happy. I don't typically like a lot of the times when shows speed things up because I feel like it, you know, you miss a lot of, you know, important or, you know, iconic moments and compared to a book. But I thought what they did was a really good job. They've got Rowan already now to New Orleans. We're there. We've, you know, Deirdre's dead. Things are moving. Things are progressing.
Yeah, we finally got her out of the way.
Yeah, I don't have to look at her anymore now. Kidding. I liked her. I really did like her. You know, I think she would have been a great character, but we knew she had to go. So overall, I'm very happy. And I'm looking forward again to next week.
So I'm just going to continue my arc of superior positivity over you guys. I thought it was a very good episode. Lots of good action. Well done. Move the story forward. Alexandra Daddario is turning pretty interesting as that character. You know, she's got a lot ahead of her, poor Rowan. So it'll be interesting to see how she handles that from an acting perspective. And I hope people who are listening and watching really give the show the kind of fair chance it deserves, which is not to be a faithful reproduction of a rambling book.
Right.
With a rambling book with a great story, but a rambling book nonetheless. Mm-hmm.
Here's where I am after this episode. I wish that I hadn't read the book.
Me too.
Yeah.
I wish I was watching this. Well, no, I wish I was watching this with fresh eyes. Although I don't know how easy it would be to follow along.
I think you get more out of it because we are at least more informed on the lore than we would be otherwise. And I think it enhances your enjoyment. You know, I think you can compartmentalize a little bit saying, okay, I know this about the kinds of characters and the general arc of the story, but let's see how they tell it.
Yeah.
You know,
I want Rowan to get some control though. I want her.
Yeah,
I want her. Together, I want her. I want Sip to clue her in.
Yeah.
And I want Rowan to get,
now
get
she's got to start. Yeah.
This.
And she's got to start, you know, a power play with Carlotta.
Yeah.
And, you know, take over the house a bit. And then of
find
course,
out who killed her mommy.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Waiting, I'm waiting for like the remodeling montage.
Yeah. Right. Well, I don't know. Michael's not in it. So maybe they don't remodel.
All right. So Joanne, do you want to take us out?
All right, guys, that's a wrap for us. We hope you enjoyed our recap of episode 2 of The Mayfair Witches. If you enjoyed it, please remember to share us with your friends. You can also follow us on social media. We're on Reddit, Facebook, and Instagram under Vampire Insider. And you can also follow us on Twitter at @Vampire_Insider. You can also follow our personal Twitter accounts at Mark Eats Peach and at Christina Jen X. I am on a social media timeout right now, but I'll be back soon.
You're banned.
Thank you. I was not banned. I'm in a timeout. So it's
yes.
A self-inflicted timeout.
Self-imposed.
Exactly. But anyway, thank you guys and have a great night. Good night, Mark. Good night, Christina.
Bye.
Peace out, witches.
Well, that's lame.
Yeah.
Did you weren't on Twitter, so you may not have seen this, but they were planning on doing 10 seasons. Girl, buckle up.
Yeah.
They better do more than 7 episodes a season.
They better start shooting them faster, I'll tell you that, because it's hard to make people look the same for a decade.
Look, if we're sitting here in 2033, we better start be getting paid for this shit.
Like, if
I'm sorry.
What if Lestat's just a singer-songwriter playing his
music? He's just like playing in a coffee house or something.
In New Orleans.
Yeah, he's a busker.
That's the crossover. She walks in and there's Lestat singing.
Lestat singing. Yeah. He just has that one song, though.
He's like, come to me.
I think you were just singing Ka the Snake song from the Jungle Book.
I hate that song. Come to me.